Well, let me tell you a little bit of our speaker, Superintendent Eddie Johnson. He joined the Chicago Police Department in 1988, and he has served in several supervisory roles, including a sergeant in the 5th District, sergeant in the Detective Division, a gang technical sergeant. He was a lieutenant in patrol in the 15th District, that's the Austin District on the west side of Chicago. He became chief of patrol, where he commanded 8,000 police officers. He's a member of the executive board of NOBLE, the National Order of Black Law Enforcement Officers, Chicago Chapter, and the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation Assistance Committee. Superintendent Johnson has a bachelor's degree from Governor State University and is completing his master's in public policy administration with a specialization in public safety and national security from Northwestern University. Superintendent Johnson is a Chicago native. He grew up in Cabrini Green until he was 9 years old, at which point his family moved to Washington Heights, and that is where Superintendent Johnson continues to reside. Our second speaker will be Illinois Senate member Michael Connolly. Michael, where are you? You want to stand up a second, Mike? Thank you, Michael. Senator Connolly is currently serving his second term in the Illinois Senate. Prior to that, he had served two terms in the Illinois House of Representatives. His district includes Naperville, Lyle, Wheaton, Warrenville, Winfield, Carroll Stream, West Chicago, and Bloomingdale. In the state Senate, Senator Connolly serves on the Judiciary, Labor, Licensed Activities and Pensions, Commerce, and Economic Development Committees. He is the minority spokesman for the Senate Criminal Law Committee and is a member of the Illinois State Commission on Criminal Justice and Sentencing Reform. He's a native of Chicago, but he was raised in LaGrange. He graduated from Loyola University and the John Marshall Law School. Even though he didn't tell us what high school we went to, we're going to assume that he is a graduate of a high school. My state senator. Senator Kwame Raoul. Kwame, you want to just stand up for a second? Kwame's a native Chicagoan, born to Haitian-born immigrants, Dr. Jeanine Raoul and his wife, Maurice Therese Raoul. Kwame has been the senator of the 13th District since November 6th of 2004. He's a lifelong resident of the Hyde Park-Kenwood area, and he has taken the seat of former state senator and our president, Barack Obama. Kwame is known as a leading progressive voice in the Illinois Senate. He's championed legislation on criminal justice reform, including legislation that abolishes the death penalty, legislation creating the Torture Inquiry Commission, and legislation promoting diversion programs for nonviolent offenders. He's also chairman of the Senate's Pension and Investment Committee. He has fought for pension ethics reform and has led efforts to expand opportunities for minority and women-owned financial firms and ridding the state's pension system of corruption. He's chairman of the Senate Redistricting Committee. Senator Raoul is a graduate of DePaul University, the Chicago Kent College of Law, and he lives in the Hyde Park community with his lovely wife, Kaylee, and his two children, Shay and Mazan. The Honorable Michael Zalewski. Mike, where are you?
Right here.
Ah, there he is.
University of Chicago High School.
For Zalewski? For, oh, okay, Kwame. I don't think it was in there. Good. State Representative Mike Zalewski was elected to the Illinois House in 2008, and he has won over allies on both sides of the aisle. He's authored and led passage of a number of important laws, including our state's first racketeering statute, comprehensive rideshare law, and the creation of an independent tax tribunal to help repair the state's image with the business community. Senator Zalewski is chairperson of the House Healthcare Licenses Committee, vice chairman of the House Personnel and Pensions Committee. He's a native Southwest Sider, went to the University of Illinois in Champaign, good for him, and he returned to Chicago where he earned his law degree at the John Marshall Law School. Both he and Senator Connolly were prosecutors in the Cook County State's Attorney's Office, and he lives in West Suburban Riverside with his wife, Carrie. I think Carrie was in a class I did for the Illinois Women in Leadership. Glad to have you, Carrie. They have three children, and his dad is on this side of the room, one of the great muskie fishermen of all time, the alderman of the 23rd Ward, Mike Zalewski.
Hey, Dr. Lee, he added a fourth child, and I can't neglect
her. Okay. You don't want to leave him out. Absolutely. Our final speaker is the Honorable State Representative Egley Sims. LG is serving his second full term as state rep of the 34th District. So that includes portions of the south side of Chicago, Chicago's south suburbs, Will and Kankakee counties. Representative Sims is an attorney, second-generation small business owner, former director of appropriations for the Illinois Senate Democratic Caucus. Representative Sims has helped to pass a law that gives more Illinois residents with criminal histories a better shot at a good future and a good job by allowing the records of certain nonviolent crimes to be sealed. He also helped in passing a law requiring universal background checks and requiring lost or stolen guns to be reported within 72 hours. A native Chicagoan, Representative Sims has a BA in political science from Illinois State University, an MPA from the U of I, and a JD from Loyola University. He lives in the Chatham neighborhood with his wife and their two daughters. Thank you, all of our panelists. Now, I'd like to bring everybody's attention to these pictures of children up above us. These are all pictures of children who have passed away because of gun violence, and we've invited 20 mothers and friends of these children to be with us today. If you folks would stand up, please, we'd like to recognize all of you. I would like to ask Superintendent Johnson to come up to the podium. He's going to make a few remarks, and then I'd like to ask the rest of our speakers to come up here, and they will respond. So, Superintendent Johnson, if you would join us.
Good afternoon. First, I want to extend my thanks to the City Club for hosting a discussion that I think is vital to the future of our great city. I also want to thank our legislators in attendance today for your efforts in helping us make Chicago safer. Your assistance is integral in helping us pass legislation that will help make a meaningful difference in reducing violence in our city, as well as in engaging and informing residents around our common efforts to fight crime. I'd like to begin our discussion by giving you a number, and I'd like you to keep this number in mind throughout this event this afternoon. The number is 626. 626. That's the number of people who've been killed so far this year in the city of Chicago. 626 people who won't see another birthday. 626 people who won't be at home for the holidays, 626 families in grief, 626 individual tragedies that have occurred mostly in Chicago's neighborhoods on the south and west sides. Of the murders that have occurred this year, 92% of the victims are male. 78% of the victims are African American. 76% of the victims are between the ages of 15 and 34. 92% of the victims have been killed by guns. Multiple generations of young black men never had a chance to make something of their lives because of illegal guns and the criminals willing to use them. I've been a police officer for 28 years, and I can guarantee you I've seen things most people should never witness once in their lifetime, let alone on a consistent basis for almost 30 years. I've seen too many lives torn apart, too many parents lose a child. As an African-American leader in Chicago, I'm disgusted by this fact. As a cop, it makes me angry. And as a Chicagoan, I'm ashamed because we can do better. We need to do better. We must do better. Every day, Chicago police officers are working tirelessly to make our streets safer. And through their efforts and through our gun turn-in programs, we have taken more than 7,200 guns off the streets of Chicago since January 1st. That means since the beginning of the year, on average, we've recovered one illegal handgun per hour since the beginning of the year. One illegal handgun per hour. At the same time, street gangs have splintered into numerous factions. They're at war over drugs, territories, and lately, petty arguments over social media, which continue to drive the violence. In many instances, these offenders take part in this violence are no strangers to the criminal justice system. Having been cycled through a process with a severe lack of accountability that often finds them serving less than half their sentences just to be back on the streets again to commit the same crimes over and over and over again. And in many of these instances, they aren't strangers to CPD either. These offenders are part of a relatively small percentage of the population driving the violence in Chicago. We know who they are. They've been arrested before by our hardworking officers, been arrested far too many times. With our partners at John Jay College and social service providers, CPD offers them a way out of their dangerous lifestyle by offering them access to things like education, housing, job skills, health care. We're there not to put them in jail, but to give them hope. About a third of those CPD has reached out to have taken us up on this offer. As for those who haven't, we keep trying until we can't try anymore, but we continue to try to get them out of that lifestyle. Year to date, and I want you to listen to this, year to date, 85% of the fatal and non-fatal shooting victims in Chicago are known to CPD because they're part of this at-risk group, 85%. Now, I'm not looking to victimize victims. Any person shot, killed is one too many, regardless of your history or the lifestyle you choose. But that number puts right in front of all of us the fact that this violence is heavily concentrated to individuals that are almost as likely to be offenders as they are to be victims, because many times the victims are previous offenders. In fact, listen to this. 40% of the people we arrested for murder have had at least one prior gun arrest in their background. That's almost half of them, half of the murder offenders. More than half the people we arrest for murder have been arrested more than 10 times. Right now, if we arrest a gun offender, they'll serve months in custody. If we arrest and convict them again, they are in for a year. And that's if they serve any time at all. So let's repeat that. If we arrest a gun offender right now, they'll serve months in custody. Then if we arrest and convict them again, they're in for a year. And that's if they serve any time at all. Let me be clear. The gang members on our streets think this is a joke. And how do I know that? Because I'm out there with them. How many times do we need to arrest a gun offender and impose a light sentence before they realize that the consequences of their destructive actions are less severe compared to the consequences of being caught by a rival gang without a gun? It's a scary proposition. and we need to create a culture of accountability in our criminal justice system to address it. As you all know, I've been working with Senator Munoz, Senator Raul, Representative Sims, and Representative Zalewski to craft legislation that would give judges guidelines to sentence on repeat offenders at the higher end of the sentencing range so that we can send a clear and consistent message that we will not let our communities be terrorized by the criminal activity of these individuals. In fact, to be truly effective, the language would contain predicating violent offenses that would classify an individual as a repeat gun offender to ensure that we're not casting a wide net, but instead using a spear to pinpoint the individuals that are driving our violence on the streets. It's also important that the bill include language to ensure that if judges choose to provide lighter sentences than specified by the law, that they'll provide sufficient publicly available statements explaining their decisions. I understand that there are people who have a gun to protect their business or their family, and this legislation is not intended to target those people, which is why we're going after the repeat gun offenders. I also understand the very real issue of mass incarceration among minorities. And let me tell you, as a black man in Chicago, raised on the South Side and North Side in Cabrini-Green, the last thing I'm looking to do is lock someone up based on the color of their skin or where they live. In fact, I firmly believe it's important to steer those who are charged with nonviolent offenses to the right path and away from arrest and incarceration, something that CPD has already begun to do. I want our focus to be on the individuals that we know are driving the violence on the streets, who know right from wrong, who have been given a second chance, and yet they still decide to pull the trigger. Despite what I've said here today, people say that more police are the answer. Well, we're hiring 970 police, to be exact, over the next 2 years. They'll say prevention is the answer, and in addition to the social services CPD helps provide, Mayor Emanuel recently announced a comprehensive mentoring program for youth. They'll also say that jobs are the answer. And I agree, that's a good portion of it, and I know the mayor and aldermen have made commitments to invest in economic opportunity, which I support wholeheartedly. But quite simply, these solutions alone can't fix the problem. We have to address the violence head on, send a clear signal to violent offenders that we won't tolerate the killings anymore. CPD can't do this alone. We need your help, and I can't stress that enough. We must be willing to take the brave step to hold those accountable who inflict harm on our streets. I'd like to leave you with something to think about. A year ago yesterday, 9-year-old Tyshawn Lee was doing what he's supposed to be doing at his age, having fun at the playground when DeWright Doty, a repeat gun offender multiple times, promised Tyshawn that if he went with him to a convenience store, he'd buy him whatever he wanted. Instead, Doty lured him into an alley and barbarically executed him to settle a gang conflict. He pulled the trigger and took away the innocent life of a child without a second thought. This past summer, on a Friday afternoon, Nakia Aldridge registered her child at school. And shortly thereafter, her life was cut short by gunfire from two convicted felons who were both on parole, one of them for a gun, one for a gun offense, and the other was on his daily break from electronic monitoring bracelet. The bullets weren't meant for Nakia. They were meant for someone else on the street in her vicinity. Their intended targets of the crime, he looked at them the wrong way, a gentleman that was out there on the street also. A completely innocent life taken away because of a glance. As a city, we all responded in shock to both cases, and we continue to use Tyshawn and Nakia's senseless murders, along with many others that have occurred before and after, as a rallying cry for addressing violence at the hands of repeat offenders. Perhaps if this legislation was in effect before their killers ever pulled the trigger, they would still be here today, and murderers would still be in jail. Enough is enough. Let's roll up our sleeves and work together to not take that chance again. Let's give the residents in the neighborhoods most affected by gun violence the chance to look to the future with hope and give our city a real chance to heal. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Okay, I'd like to ask our other respondents to please come up to the dais and take about 2 minutes each to respond, because we have a lot of questions here, including someone who's trying to stuff the ballot box. I must have 20 questions from the same person on different pieces of colored paper and that, but they're the exact same questions, word for word. Imagine that. Okay, Senator Raul, do you want to start, and then we'll have Senator Connolly respond, and then Representative Sims and Zalewski.
They each yield a minute of their time to me, so.
That's what seniority gets you.
Doctor, now you see why we stay away from the Senate.
First, I want to acknowledge a senator who is not here, and that's Senator Tony Munoz, who's been trying to work on this issue for many years now, and Our views haven't always been aligned as to how to approach it. There had been a bill in the past that had been proposed that would have bumped up the minimum sentencing on all gun offenses and add a layer of truth in sentencing over that, and that was proposed as the answer to gun violence in Chicago. We have been, I want to acknowledge the presence of Roger Heaton, who is here. Roger is... Roger is the chair of the Governor's Criminal Justice Reform Commission, on which I sit, and LG sits, and Senator Connolly sits. And we've been having meetings over the last year and a half, and one of the things we've realized is we have to move away from policies such as truth in sentencing that is leading to the over-incarceration. We won't be able to afford it. We simply won't be able to afford it, so we have to take a different approach. And that's why I suggested, and originally Representative Zalewski and I met, and I suggested that perhaps we can take a more nuanced approach to this that targets the offenders that the superintendent mentioned, but does not utilize these approaches that are failed approaches that we're trying to move away from. And so the idea was to in lieu of bumping up the minimums, and for anybody, I want to talk about what this isn't. This is not mandatory minimums. People have been referring to this and branding it as a new mandatory minimum bill. News alert, we already have mandatory minimums on gun offenses. I had a conversation with Andrea Zopp about a year ago, and I said, what do you think about this whole debate about the former bill? And she says, well, we don't need to bump it up. We already have a wide enough existing range. We just have to make sure we utilize that range for the particular offenders that ought to be sentenced at a higher rate. So in lieu of just reflexively bumping up minimums, create a scheme that would allow for more individualized approach. And that would say that a repeat gun offender would presumptively start out at a higher base within the existing range. Now, as the superintendent talked about, there can be very unique circumstances that any person in here, any person logically would say, well, that's not somebody we're trying to send to prison for a number of years or trying to send to prison at all. And this could be a repeat gun offender. And because of that, we created a scheme within the legislation to allow judges to deviate, to allow for judicial discretion. What we have done historically is remove this judicial discretion, and that has been a failed policy. And again, we're trying to move away from that with the Criminal Justice Reform Commission. And so what we try to do with this legislation, and many of you all haven't seen language, that's why many people have been characterizing it as something that it is not. Language will be coming out shortly, but we've been taking our time to get it right. It's important to get it right. but we do realize that there is a particular offender that we're not giving up on. But, and I don't believe in this, some others may, I don't believe in this as a deterrent. I believe people are more, the greater deterrent is that comes with in hiring more police officers. People are more, they're deterred by the fear of getting caught more so than they're deterred by a higher sentence. I do believe that some, in order to rehabilitate them, you have to incapacitate them. But we have to create a circumstance in our Department of Correction that allows us to incapacitate them, to rehabilitate them. And so we cannot divorce this discussion from a discussion on criminal justice reform, policies that would move us away from truth in sentencing, allow for sentencing credits, get a more victim-centered approach, and embrace things like trauma recovery centers in the community. We can't divorce this discussion from that.
Thank you, Senator Raul. And Senator Connolly?
Well, my 1 minute that I have that I provided.
Raul, we only have 9 million questions.
I know, I'll be brief. I did graduate from high school.
Oh, yes.
I graduated from
St.
Joseph High School in Westchester. When I was in eighth grade, Isaiah Thomas came to my house to recruit me. I was at one time an accomplished basketball player. But I'll be honest with you, it plays a big role in how I view things. My teammates were from 21st and Christiana, Madison, Pulaski, and North Lawndale. And they're still friends, dear friends, very successful, by the way. I'm a former Cook County Assistant State's Attorney. I represent Western DuPage County. But the question is, what do we do? Well, we have to do something. And I credit Senator Raul, certainly the sobering comments from Superintendent Johnson this past weekend. And I'll be brutally frank, I'm a White Sox fan. And I heard you singing a song. I'm not familiar with the lyrics. But in all honesty, what was sobering and very disconcerting was this past weekend, knowing that so many people, including one of our children, were in Lakeview, East Lakeview, because as all of you know, there's no such neighborhood as Wrigleyville. It's East Lakeview. And they were celebrating a great thing, a big accomplishment for the Chicago Cubs. And yet not very far away, there were children the same age or younger that were absolutely in fear for their life. And that's what prompts us to have to do something. It's hard to follow Senator Raul. He put it out there as starkly as you can, that there are truth in sentencing and mandatory minimums for gun violence. We still have to do something. And Roger Heaton, I too want to commend you. I'm here for one reason. There's a bipartisan solution to this issue. Governor Rauner has been steadfast in taking the criminal justice system and literally turning it upside down with the help of LG Kwame and others. But this too is going to require a bipartisan solution, because where it may be a Northeast Illinois provincial problem, it affects all the state. And I look forward to going back to Springfield next week to working with Kwame and LG on making this happen.
Thank you, Senator Connolly. As a little aside, one of your colleagues, Senator Nibel, wants to know if you had a higher GPA or points scored per game.
It was pretty close.
That's what Jane Pignator said. Okay. Representative Sims?
Thank you. You know, both Mike and Kwame said, you know, a lot about what we are trying to do, but I think it's important for us to recognize the faces that are on this screen and also the families that are in this audience who have been victims of gun violence. That's, you know, you have the discussions about what we are trying to do without actually seeing what the language says. You know, there is a study done by the Centers for Disease Control talking about Wilmington, Delaware, gun violence in Wilmington, Delaware. And I know, obviously, Wilmington, Delaware is not the same as Chicago, Illinois. But it synthesized those victims down to five basic issues. People who had the number of ER visits they'd taken, educational achievement, inclusion into this criminal justice system, inclusion with the juvenile justice system, and also their employment status. So what we're talking about, and you're looking across the violence that you see in our communities, for all of the communities where violence is taking place, they are the most economically depressed and the economically challenged communities around the city and around the state. So what we are trying to do is look at this not as only the end-all solution. This has got to be a holistic approach to justice reinvestment, to making sure that we are investing in policies and procedures that will keep people away from the criminal justice system. We've had on the Criminal Justice Reform Commission some very intense discussions about what we're going to do to keep people away from the system, but when they are incapacitated, to rehabilitate them. Because that's how you're going to keep people out of the system. You're going to rehabilitate them when they come into the system, or you're going to divert them in the first place. That means investing in education. It means investing in job opportunities. That means making sure that people have hope. That's really what's lost. Where, and the superintendent mentioned this, 626 lives over the last 5 years, nearly 2,500 people who have lost their lives because of gun violence. Now, we want to make sure that we are putting policies in place. And since I stepped into the Illinois House of Representatives, I worked very hard to make sure our communities are safe, making sure that we are investing in policies that will keep guns out of the hands of individuals who should not have them. And frankly, we've done a good job, but we have much more to do. We've passed laws to tackle gun running. We've passed laws to tackle individuals who don't report guns lost or stolen, because that's how guns get into the stream of commerce. Because folks don't report them lost or stolen, and then they end up in the hands of someone who's going to use them illegally. We want to put an end to that. This proposal, I can't stress enough. This is not mandatory minimums. Mandatory minimums, they don't work. You see there is growing sentiment, not just in Illinois but around the country, against mandatory minimums. There is growing sentiment that our criminal justice system is broken, and folks want to see they want to see it repaired. They want to see it work. They want to see it incapacitate those who should be incapacitated, but rehabilitate those nonviolent offenders who are not a threat to our public safety. And that's what we're working towards. We want to make sure that the individuals who are a threat to our public safety and are a threat to our communities, they are held accountable. But for those individuals who are nonviolent offenders, we want to give them opportunities to make sure they have the every opportunity to make their lives better.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Zalewski, and then we'll open it up to some of the questions that have come up here.
Thank you. And I'll be brief because we've covered a lot in the last 5 minutes. It was my bill that Senator Raul referenced 3 years ago. And I guess it's been a learning experience over these last 3 years, in that I've gone through several permutations of a way to attack this policy problem, because I think we can all agree it's a policy problem. One of the things to remember about the original permutation of that bill is it caused a very serious conversation to be had about how we were going to do things going forward, because as Kwame and LG and Mike mentioned, there is a real movement, and Illinois can be a real trendsetter here for nationally on how to do sentencing policy going forward. We are not, needless to say, in Illinois, we are not burning the house down with innovative legislation right now and unique problem solving. On criminal justice reform, however, I think it's incredibly clear that we've made great strides in the last 3 years, and it's because I think people have viewed it as a moral issue, which is what it is, and as a taxpayer stewardship issue. It is, besides Medicaid and besides pensions, corrections is probably a blind share of the money we spend in our general revenue fund, and we need to be respectful of that, and we need to realize that we can do good things going forward to make Illinois a place where people look at there and say, man, that state really has it together when it comes to what we're going to do to be smart on crime. So with that, thank you for having us today, and I look forward to your
thank
questions.
You, Representative. Okay, I'll try to handle as many of these questions. And, gentlemen, if you would limit your responses to as brief as possible, and if it's a yes or no, that's perfectly acceptable. The very first question is from the chairman of the RTA, Kirk Dillard. Why isn't 15 to 20 life gun sentencing laws ever urged by prosecutors or judges? Who would like to take on that one? Senator Raul?
Well, I, again, those are failed type policies. We've got to embrace individualized treatment, and it's not just nonviolent offenders that need to be rehabilitated. We need to recognize that. It's folks charged with violent offenses, folks who we do send to prison. They get out, folks, and guess what? They get out and they live amongst us. I want to acknowledge Levante Stewart. Levante, where are you? Levante is my district director, and I talked about how we need to invest in hiring ex-offenders, but I was talking about it for a while without walking the walk, and Levante is an ex-offender who did spend time in the Department of Corrections, and if I can't do it, I can't call on anybody else to do it. He's since got his master's degree from DePaul University, and he's leading a real productive life. That's why we can't embrace those types of policies.
Great, thank you.
Can I just
Mike?
Add really quick back? I think to your question, Senator, if we could manage prosecutorial and judicial machinations in every courtroom, I think this problem, it would be mitigated to a dramatic extent. The fact is we are having no success in that area, and we shouldn't. We shouldn't be the managers of courtrooms when it comes to prosecutors and judges. But when there's a clear and glaring policy problem, which I think it's fair to say we as policymakers recognize here, we can give the prosecutors and we can give the judges and the public defenders the tools they need to fix these problems. I think the beneficial piece of this legislation is it is going to put everyone in a position to be held accountable and be transparent about what happens in courtrooms. That's probably one of the best parts about the legislation.
Okay, to segue from that response, this question is from Jill Zwick, City Club member. Is this law going to over-incarcerate or will it be narrow in its scope and delivery? Who would like to send Representative Sims?
I think, Jill, to your question, this is part of our overall strategy on criminal justice reform. What we are doing with the commission is we are looking at all evidence and we're looking at all sentencing guidelines to figure out how we're going to not just incarcerate everyone, but make sure we are incarcerating the right people. We want to incapacitate those who should be incapacitated because they're a danger to our public safety. But we want to make sure that that is done in the most productive manner possible. And that includes making sure that when they are incarcerated, they are receiving the appropriate rehabilitative services so that when they come out, we live up to our constitutional requirement that we return people to their fullest usefulness. And that's what we're trying to implement for this legislation and for all of our criminal justice reform legislation. It's not just about making sure that we incapacitate individuals, but it's making sure that we are making our communities safer. And this is not going to be implemented in a silo, but it's going to be implemented as part of a broader strategy.
Okay, thank you.
I want to add one thing. Superintendent Johnson brought up the number, and I'll leave today remembering it, 626. 626, folks, when it comes to over-incarceration, the folks that are perpetrating these crimes on these children, they need to be incarcerated for a while.
Thank you. Remember that number, 626. You can forget about 708. That's history.
Or 108.
That's when the ball game started, okay? 4 months ago, three of the panelists here announced their support for legislation aimed at reducing gun violence by increasing prison sentences for some repeat gun offenders. The veto session starts in less than 2 weeks, but we still haven't seen any specific legislative language. When will this be made public? If it's not going to be made public, please tell us how does the bill define repeat gun offenders in a way that's different from the current statute? Question came from Sharon Mitchell.
Well, first of all, I have never seen a piece of legislation that wasn't made public. So, but sometimes a mistake we can make is to make something public before it's anywhere near a finished product. We have to knock it around amongst us and to make it precise. I could point to several pieces of law changes that were introduced and passed in Springfield over the last, I'd say, 5 to 10 years that were identified as the answer to ending gun violence in Chicago. Well, obviously, it didn't happen. So sausage making is not just something that's dilatory just for the sake of being dilatory, but we got to get it right. We have to look at data. We have to knock things around. We have to debate amongst ourselves. Once we get it right, once it's introduced, www.ilga.gov. It's very public. You can access it anywhere in the world.
Thank you. This question is from Pam Bosley. She is the mother of Terrell, who was shot and killed. It's addressed to Superintendent Johnson. Superintendent, I agree that something has to be done because I live in fear on the south side of Chicago every day. So after the proposal is complete, what can we do to help and make sure that this bill is passed?
Okay, so after the proposal is complete, I need you to reach out to your legislative people and give your support for this bill. So let me just say this. As a black man, African-American man, leader in the city of Chicago right now, I look at this thing from a unique perspective. I'm a police officer, but I'm also a father. I'm an African-American who lives in an African-American community. When I go into these African-American communities, look up here at these photos. People look at me as an African-American leader and say to me, Superintendent, you need to stop this. When is enough enough? I'm sick and tired of having to look at these photos. These families deserve for us to do something about this. If you always do what you did, you're going to always get what you got. What we're currently doing and what we've done before clearly hasn't worked. It hasn't worked. So we have an obligation. I have an obligation to do something. This is what I'm looking to do. I am no fan of mass incarceration, disproportionate arrests. I believe in as Senator Raul said, or L.G. Sims, if we send people to correctional institutes, we have to correct them. If we simply give them more time in prison, I still got to deal with them when they come back. So this is a multi-layered approach to doing this. But this is one of the things, because I'll tell you all this. I still go out there with the officers in the streets. I still talk to gang members, and I use that term loosely. And you know what they tell me? Without a doubt, they think Cook County's judicial system is a joke. They also tell me, boss man, until you all can guarantee me that I'm going away for some time, I'm going to keep picking up my gun. So what we have to do is change the culture, the mentality of them even wanting to pick up a gun. And I'll just close with this one thing. When you all think about Tyshawn Lee, think to yourselves, at some point, those two guys that killed him, at some point as they're walking him into that alley, it should have clicked to somebody, this isn't right. Let me put this gun down. But it didn't. These repeat gun offenders have to know that their sentencing is going to fit their crime, period.
Okay, thank you.
Ed, if I could, don't just stop with Chicago legislators, though. There are 118 members of the House, 59 members of the Illinois Senate, and the governor's got to sign it. So you have to have 60, you have to convince 60 members of the House, 30 members of the Senate, and the governor to make sure that this is a priority. So don't just stop with Chicago members. There are members throughout the state. Call them. As Senator Raul mentioned, ilga.gov, all of our contact information, including email addresses, are right there. Make sure you're reaching out to everybody. If this is a priority, make sure that you are reaching out to everyone and expressing that this is something that you want to see passed. Engage in your community, because this is all of our community.
Thank you. This question is from Don Schollenberger, City Club member. Are we going to be able to do anything about gun violence on a local level without legislation on a national level, which doesn't seem likely? Mike?
Which Mike?
The
two mics?
We have one and two. Let's work the alphabet backwards. We'll start with Z and we'll come
back
to C.
Yeah, to the question of, I think it's a really good question of, can we rely on Congress to give us the federal tools we need to crack down on illegal gun use? And quite frankly, I'm not entirely sure that's possible given the strength of the NRA lobby. It is incredibly difficult to crack down on illegal gun use both federally and locally when you have the concern that it will infringe upon the Second Amendment, the rights of law-abiding gun owners. So I think that there are a number of things we can do to improve public safety through federal legislation and local legislation. But as LG mentioned, it takes 60 votes in the House and 30 votes in the Senate, along with a gubernatorial signature, to enact policy in the state. And we're left with very few pathways to do that unless we can get bipartisan support for legislation. So while it would be nice to have some help from Congress and the feds, not only in the legislative side, but I think it's fair to say that it was encouraging for lawmakers to hear U.S. Attorney Zach Farden discuss the ways he's trying to help this problem as well through enforcement techniques. But we need to, as legislators, we're always dealing in the art of what's possible. And what's possible is the legislation that is progressive on the criminal justice front and takes us in a new direction on how we enact sentencing in Illinois. Excuse me.
Thank you, Michael. Mike Connolly?
Sure. The only thing I would add is I don't know if anybody has seen there's a presidential election out there, and I wouldn't suspect anything's going to happen from Congress on something like this, regardless of the outcome. And again, we're state legislators. We don't need to wait for Congress to act. But I would add that this is repeat gun offenders. So the Second Amendment really shouldn't be impacted at all, and to the extent that it would be, we certainly will hear about it in Springfield. I don't know the exact language. There's a lot of discussion about it. What I have heard, I don't think will cause Second Amendment advocates like myself to oppose it. But I've got to see the language first.
If I could just add, I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make is to look at legislation to cure it all. I think the number one thing that we can do to combat gun violence is to get to know the shooter. Get to know the shooter, not at the time that he or she has perpetrated a crime, but get to know their development from birth to the point that they pick up a gun. Until we invest in the communities where most of these shooters are coming from, stop the apartheid in schools, create economic access. If we have a capital bill, let's just not build roads that go around these communities. Let's invest in these communities until we get to know the shooter and we invest in the development of that shooter. They'll find, if it's not a gun, they'll find something else to perpetrate the crime with.
Okay, thank you. This question is from Cleopatra Pendleton, who's the mother of Hydea Pendleton. As a parent of a child who was murdered senselessly at the age of 15, I think the question reads, do you think that we should reconsider adopting the death penalty for crimes such as this?
No.
Yes.
So we have a no and a yes. Anybody else want to comment on that up here?
I'll expand upon it since I was led to move into abolish the death penalty. First of all, the death penalty was discriminatorily applied. If you're an African American, you'd be for the same crime. You'd more likely end up on death row. Secondly, Illinois was second only to the state of Florida in the number of innocent people we sent to death row, and that's a shame. And part of that is probably because Texas has swift justice, and they probably put people to death who didn't commit the crimes that they were put to death on. And unless somebody's willing to inject the serum that puts somebody to death, I don't think, not knowing whether or not they did it, I don't think they should be a proponent of the death penalty.
Okay, thank you. The next question is from, I think it's Tom Kocherar. If not, I apologize for butchering your name. Would legalizing all drugs cut down on gun violence and gang violence? Isn't that mainly the source of gang rivalries and income? Superintendent Johnson?
I would say this. Drugs, legalizing all drugs would not be the answer to it. But right now, I can tell you this. In Chicago, if I were to ask you what drug did you think was the drug of choice in Chicago, I think most people would probably say either heroin or cocaine. Well, actually, it's marijuana. And I can tell you this, in my 28 years, we never had an issue with marijuana drug spots being violent. Well, that's all changed now. These gang members are shooting and killing each other over petty issues. It's not just drug territory, narcotics. It could be a beef on social media. You looked at my girlfriend the wrong way. You know, the reasons that are fueling our violence now, you can't compare to 10 years ago because this is a different age. We're in a different world now. And I just think that it's important. I forget which one of my colleagues mentioned this, but I tell you all this. You have to give these people hope. You show me a person without hope, and I show you a person that pick up a gun and shoot everybody in this room. So we have to make investments in these individuals in order to reduce this violence. Law enforcement is just one piece of it. If we reduced every narcotics law in the country, that's just one piece of it. There's a whole lot of layers that support the violence in our city. And so we have to take a holistic approach to it and invest in all of those areas in order to reduce this violence.
And to that point, Superintendent, we've got to also deal with the influx of illegal guns on our streets. We have too many guns on our streets. I believe in supporting the Second Amendment for those who are lawfully exercising that right. But we have guns that are coming from states outside of Illinois. We can identify several gun shops that are in the immediate area where the illegal guns flow onto our streets. These young people can get a gun easier than they can find a library card. And that is when you have that kind of access to a lethal weapon, let's be honest. The individuals who are perpetrating these crimes are young people. They're not fully developed. They don't understand the consequence of their actions, but they have access to guns where they can carry out these lethal actions, and without the investment to make sure that they never they realize how to resolve conflicts in the first place. We've got to do a better job. This cannot just be the only solution. And I don't think you would hear anyone on this panel say that this is the end all be all, that this is the only thing we can do. We've got to do a better job. We've got to invest in making sure that individuals have access to opportunities. They understand that there is a better pathway, there is a better life, rather than picking up a gun to utilize to solve conflict and as a way to address these issues. We've got to address, and in that respect, to a previous question, our cousins in Congress. The gun lobby is extremely powerful. They are extremely powerful, and you have seen that they have lobbied Congress into inaction on this very issue, making to keep reasonable, rational, responsible regulations, putting regulations on guns to make sure that we keep guns out of the hands of those who shouldn't have them. We've got to do a better job.
Should acknowledge Congressman Robin Kelly, who's been
a
leader,
Congressman, who's doing a wonderful job in this area.
On legalization, I'm not a proponent of legalizing all mind-altering substances. However, one of the things we are looking at and what we need to look at is who we're labeling a felon. We need to look at potentially reducing certain nonviolent drug offenses and other nonviolent offenses to misdemeanors, because once you label somebody a felon, you spiral them to a life where they end up potentially being a threat to public safety.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. I tried to combine a couple questions here. We have time for several more. This was asked by Ana Villarreal, who's with the Boy Scouts of America. How can groups like the Boy Scouts join forces with you? I guess this is directed at the superintendent, to prevent violence in Chicago and the suburbs.
Well, what I would say to that is you can help us by helping to mentor these young guys. Because we really, listen, I love this city a lot. I really do. I have a lot of passion for what goes on, and I'm just sickened by the level of violence that we have. Now, Having said that, I can tell you this. It's fixable. It is fixable. We just have to do the right thing. You know, it's unacceptable. When you look at these photos, if that doesn't do something to you, then you shouldn't be a leader in this city. You really shouldn't be. You know, so we need more mentoring. Like I said, trust me, we'll never arrest our way out of this situation. That's impossible. We can put 200,000 cops out there, but the simple fact is cops can't be everywhere. We need to change the mentality of these young guys who want to pick up a gun in the first place. And part of that is partnering with us to help mentor and guide these individuals. Because I'll tell you all this, a lot of them that I talk to personally, if we could offer them a different path, they would take that path. So it's our obligation to do that. The ones that choose not to, then the repeat gun offender sentence is waiting on them. Mm-hmm. But the ones that choose to go a different route, then it's our obligation to help them go that route.
Okay, thank you. Two last questions. One will be directed to the superintendent and one to our members of the state legislature. Superintendent, this is from Marie Pepe, who's a community leader in Lakeview. 5 years ago, districts 19 and 23 were combined. We were told we would lose only five detectives. Instead, we lost over 300 officers. We're now subject to shootings, upticks, and burglaries. When you address future staffing with the 970 new officers scheduled to come on and retirements that are ongoing, how will this affect many Chicago communities?
What I can tell you is this. So moving forward to the 970 additional officers, we have to kind of wait until we get closer to their matriculation through the system before we actually determine where they would go. But what I can tell you is this. They will all go to patrol. Every community in the city will get some share of that. It doesn't escape us that we kind of neglected some of the other communities that weren't seeing the violent crime. Well, we're correcting that. So we have started sending additional resources to those areas like the 19th district that had seen a reduction due to attrition. So these 1,000 officers that we're getting will, every community in the city will benefit from it.
Thank you. And then this question is addressed to our legislative members. It's from Karen Raitan, who's with the Public Health Institute of Metropolitan Chicago. When are we going to have a reliable state budget so agencies that help solve these problems can do their work?
Well, there are three Democrats and one Republican on this panel, so I feel like I'm in Springfield. So I'll leave it to my friends in the supermajority to let us know when that budget will be arriving. Oh, come on.
Come on. This is the city club.
Enough.
Sandbagging is legal here.
Come on.
I'll take that punt. We'll have a reliable state budget when we divorce it from unrelated issues.
That's why the City Club is so great. One last comment, then we have our big drawing. You know, we have wonderful prizes here at the City Club of Chicago. I'd like to ask the superintendent to make some closing remarks, and I want to thank every panelist. And don't leave, because we have something for everyone up here.
So I'd just like to close in saying this. I want to thank the City Club for hosting this event, and I want to thank my legislative partners for the help that they're giving. But I have to say to you all, I take this personally. When I go into communities, they're begging me. So I'm asking you all, that's not the right word, I'm begging you all to help me with this legislation. We absolutely have to do something about this. We owe it to these families. We owe it to these children. We owe it to our city to make this city the greatest city in the world, and we can do it. We just need to put the right things in place to get there. So when this bill comes up, please contact all the legislators in Illinois, because like I said, I'm not a fan of mass incarceration, anything like that, but I know this. The people, the repeat gun offenders that choose to continuously pick up a gun, pull the trigger, they know they can kill somebody, and they decimate families and communities, and we just have an obligation as leaders in this city to do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.